Welcome to the Goracom podcast, where investors discover great small cap companies. Thank you for taking a Goracom with you, and make sure to follow our podcast.
If you get 300 in baseball, you get to the Hall of Fame. If you shoot 50% in basketball, you're an icon. And if you go 50 for 50 in drilling, well then, you're the one and only Green River Gold. This is Aurora reporting for Goracom, and with gold maintaining its strength above $2,100 and the electric vehicle boom driving unprecedented demand for battery metals, the resource industry is witnessing a profound and optimistic shift. Amidst this transforming landscape, investors are facing a crucial decision. Do they prioritize the enduring appeal of gold, or do they capitalize on the emerging opportunities within the rapidly expanding battery metals sector? Enter Green River Gold, a dynamic small-cap resources company strategic in position to provide investors with the best of both worlds. By curating a portfolio of powerhouse projects in British Columbia, Green River Gold offers unparalleled access to the wealth potential of both precious metals and critical battery metals. Their projects include the Quesnel Nickel Magnesium Project, the Fontaine Gold Project, and three other projects in battery metals and precious metals. These projects collectively position the company in some of British Columbia's most highly prospective mining districts, as the electric vehicles projected to become a staggering $7 trillion market by 2030, and 2035 gets sales of 75 million units versus just 10.5 million in 2022. Critical minerals such as nickel, copper, cobalt, and rare elements are essential components in today's rapidly growing clean energy technologies. Green River Gold holds a strategic position to play a pivotal role in the clean energy revolution. And here to talk about that is George and CEO Perry Little.
Thanks, Aurora. Perry, welcome back, my friend. We've got a lot to talk about.
We do. It's good to see you, George.
Great to see you. The news that we're going to talk about and the deep dive, because there's some great things that are behind this, is Green River Gold received drill permit for 6,000 meters of drilling at the Quesnel Nickel Project and a bulk sampling program. Now, normally this guy, all right, a permit for deep drilling and some bulk sampling, not usually a big deal, but big level, high level, why is this so important right now? Because this seems like a real pivot point for the company.
It is. We've been waiting on this permit for quite some time. Permitting's a little backed up in BC these days, I think. But it's thrilling to finally have it. Basically, we've drilled over 50 holes now, and they pretty much all look the same. It's got to the point where every press release looks like the last one, which is good. I mean, that's what we're looking for, right? We're looking for consistency. And, you know, we've hit 50 holes right from surface. We got nickel, magnesium, chromium, cobalt. And in one area, we've got talc. We'll talk about that in a little while. But what we don't know is what's down deeper. So we've only gone down about 100 meters. I think the deepest one was 120, but typically we cut them off at about 100 meters. We're using a little portable Winkey drill that'll only get down that deep. So we were waiting for the permit to come in with a bigger drill that'll go down 300 meters, and we finally got it. So as soon as the snow melts up there, we could drill through the winter, but there's a period in the spring when everything just turns into mush up there. And unfortunately, we just hit that
dry out
there.
Thaw up and firm up a little bit.
Something like 18 Celsius in Quesnel in the middle of March. I mean, they're hitting a warm stretch up there. So, yeah, those roads will be impassable for a couple of weeks, and then we'll be able to get up there with the big drill. But, 300 meters is going to tell us a lot. And, you look at some of these other big nickel deposits in BC, they didn't drill that many holes down below 300 meters. I mean, your best economics in a pit is going to be at the top, right? And you want to see what's there. So we're excited to see how deep the zone of nickel, magnesium, chromium, and cobalt reaches. We're interested on the other little part to see how deep the talc goes down.
And hold on. Let's not go too far. You're going too far. Let's talk. Yeah. I want to mention the fact that you've gone 50 for 50 on the nickel primarily, at very shallow depths. So that's great news, right? That you're doing shallow, and now you're just it's all upside trying to go even deeper.
Yeah, we're going to concentrate on one area. What we want to do out of this is have enough data at the end of these 20 holes to do a 43-101 compliant resource estimate on zone one, or at least a portion of zone one. And I'm sort of assuming everybody knows what we're talking about here, but we've a 14 kilometer long stretch of what we call the deep purple magnetic anomaly. And everywhere we've drilled on that 14 kilometer length, we've hit the same stuff. So most of the holes have been drilled in two large outcrops, one called zone one, one very creatively is called zone two. They're eight kilometers apart, and apart from the distance, they're basically twins. The results are the same in both places. We chose to focus on zone one because it also has this unusual substance called talc on it, so we get a double bang when we do the drilling on there. And with 20 deep holes added to what we've already drilled, we think we'll have enough data to be able to do a resource calculation on zone one. And then we'll see what we got, but it looks pretty good.
And I guess not too many companies come out this early with a 43-101. So you're going to do another 20 holes, go deeper. Should that signal to all of us that you guys are pretty optimistic about how this first 43-101 is going to turn out, given your success going 50 for 50, and now you've done some more. We haven't seen the assays for that, plus another 20. Should we be reading that as great confidence in because you're willing to tell the world, hey, here's what we think we have so far?
Yeah, we are confident. The holes at a certain point. I mean, you just get to maybe almost overconfident that every hole looks like the last one. We expect to hit the same stuff everywhere. We don't know how deep it's going to extend, and that's going to be a huge determinant in terms of the quantity of material that we can produce out of there. And one thing, we don't know what's down deep. I don't mean to confuse this, but this is volcanic. So down below, we could have semi-massive sulfides. We could have massive salt. We really don't know what's down below. This was originally the ocean floor. And the deeper we go, the more intriguing it may become. Wow. We were speculating that there'd be something down there. It was interesting. The first hole that we drilled this year, we went down, it was 107 meters in total. And like all the other holes, it was exactly the same from the first meter all the way down to the bottom. You know, the stuff is evenly disseminated all the way down.
That is unbelievable.
It is, you know, but we got a shock part way down, about 50 to 60 meters down. There was a 6 meter stretch where all of a sudden the drill core looked totally different. And when we zapped it with an XRF gun, we got these anomalous readings of other metals. They were crazy anomalous, but that happens with an XRF gun when you get really spotty readings. So you can't, you know, sort of tells you what's there. It's good qualitatively, but not
quantitatively. Gotta wait for the assays to really tell us.
So we sent it in for assay, and that 6 meter stretch had anomalous values of zinc, lead, silver, and even a little bit of gold. And we hadn't seen that other than background, you know, trace levels of those elements in any of the other holes. So this 6 meter band that we hit is, you know, some sort of a vein coming up from deeper, we're assuming. And so we really now are excited about seeing what's down below this thing, right? And we'll be quite happy if we just hit 300 meters of the same stuff we're in. We'll be thrilled, but I have the feeling we might get some surprises with 20 deep holes.
So what's the timeline ballpark looking like? Give us, if you don't mind, run us through the cadence. George will take us this long to complete the 20 holes. We're expecting to start somewhere around here, end somewhere around here, and then the 43-101. Kind of run everyone so we have an idea of what that timeline looks like so we can all kind of manage expectations.
Sure. Well, Mother Nature is going to set the timeline for a little bit here because spring hit very early. It was an unusually low snowpack up there in the mountains. I think it was about 60% of what they usually get. In the town of Quesnel, which is only 45 minutes from our site, the snow's gone. So we and with you know mid-teen type temperatures and temperatures above zero for a while, everything's going to melt quickly. So there's a stretch here. We won't even try getting up the hill until it's melted and some of the stuff has run off. But you're up on the side of the hill, so it runs off quickly, right? It's not like you're in the prairies where the stuff sits there in a swamp forever and waits for it to bake off. This stuff runs off fairly quickly. So we'll be able to get up there within a few weeks. Once we start, we figure it's about 4 months to drill those 20 holes. We've got the drill ready to go. So
well, it's pretty much in the summer, May, June, July, August. That sounds like, and you obviously drill results will be coming out intermittently because we're all waiting for those.
We're
but not then once that's all done, all then together. How long does it take to, you know, you submit all that and get a 43-101 done? You think that might be up for the end of the year?
Yeah, I do. I do. Because they've already got the database that we've got, you know, to work with, and we'll be adding to it as we go. So I really don't think it'll take that long to get those. So certainly before the end of the year, I think probably quite a bit before the end of the year. So we'll see. We haven't done one before. So we'll just see how quickly
it goes. Exciting 7-8 months. Going to be a really exciting 7-8 months for Green River Gold.
It is. I can't wait to get like a kid in a candy store here. I remember when we went to drill our first, you know, shallow hole, and I was really excited. But I've got that same feeling now. I can't get wait to get that thing in there. But
nice.
But especially with the unknown, you know, down below. I mean, we think it. You know, every hole we hit basically ended in mineralization. So we expect that this area of, nickel, magnesium, those are the two primary things that we're concentrating on. We expect that will continue on down a little deeper. How deep? We don't know. But it's what else is down there that kind of excites us, right? So, we're pumped. And the goal is to be able to say at the end of the day that area of zone one contains so many tons of ore containing X amount of nickel, X amount of magnesium, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the first time that we'll be able to say that. For now, all we've got is, you know, hey, you got a great track record, 50 for 50 or, you know, 50, 54 for 54 or whatever we're up to now. That's nice, but it's not usable. Right. So
but it's a great start. Hey, it's like a team going 50 for 50. You haven't won the Stanley Cup yet, but man, that's a great start. Devil's advocate.
Yeah, it's a great regular season record.
Let me give you a devil's advocate question, which is what do you say to investors out there who are saying, Perry, that's all great, and hope your drilling goes great, and hope your 43-101 goes great, but nickel prices right now are in a down cycle? How do you respond to investors who might legitimately be asking that question?
It's a very good question. And I think it caught everybody by surprise just how quickly they were able to ramp up production in Indonesia, which is what's really overflowing the market right now. Indonesia isn't known for, you know, the world's cleanest nickel, but they're producing a lot of it. The take up on the electric cars has slowed, but it's still expanding, right? They're still selling more than they were last year. And I think that's going to be a trend that'll continue. I always kind of wondered just how quickly we could build all those electric vehicles, because we got to build out the infrastructure. And as you know, it's a bit of a race between the two goals. We'll get there. The nickel demand is going to be growing over the next few years. It will eventually outstrip the ready supply. By the time we're ready to produce, I imagine this will correct ourselves. We sold people. We probably go through two commodity cycles before we're in production, right? Assuming we get to production, there's going to be at least a couple of commodity cycles in there. So
it's not like you're selling the nickel today for an investor to say, you're setting this company up for what we know is going to come in terms of nickel demand. And by the way, I think you brought up a great point. Indonesia, you know, maybe flooding the market with nickel right now, but we do know that the U.S. government, the Canadian government wants these important metals and minerals coming out of North America, because we want that secure supply. We don't want someone to. So isn't that must be an added advantage for you that assuming everything goes well, you'll be able to say we're right here in British Columbia.
Yeah. And the people that doubt that, I think you just have to look at the large companies that are basically voting with their wallets and take a look at what's happened just in the last few weeks, the last few months in Canada. We've got Canada Nickel as a great big, you know, relatively low grade, you know, but we're all the companies I'm going to mention are relatively low grade and relatively close to surface type projects. Canada Nickel's a huge project. It's a great project. It's in the Sudbury area, you know, or Timmins area rather, and there's the Timmins area, and they've got lots of infrastructure. But in the last few weeks, despite the declining nickel price, they've had people coming in and investing in them. So Agnico Eagle, who is a, you know, a huge Canadian gold producer, put money into Canada Nickel recently.
They see the future.
Not last year when nickel prices were high. Just in the last few weeks, they came in there. And Samsung came in and put money in there as well. So this flood of foreign, you know, large company money into Canada hasn't slowed. As a matter of fact, it's sped up. So if you look in our neighborhood, you've got FPX Nickel. They recently had Sumitomo put money in there on top of last year. Outokumpu, which is the world's largest nickel or stainless steel producer, they put money into FPX last year. A year and a half ago, Mitsubishi put money into Giga Metals. So, you know, most of these investments have come in the last few weeks while the nickel price has been low. So these guys are taking a long-term view of it. And you're right, they want secure supply of clean nickel. And you know, if you look at the nickel that's coming out of Indonesia, if you're going to build vehicles, you know, claiming that they're green vehicles, but you're getting your nickel from Indonesia, it's kind of a mixed signal.
Well, in fact, I heard from another client in a recent interview where he said that governments are going to audit the trail of where you got your resources from, where you got your product from. So you're exactly right. If ABC Automotive over here says we've got our electric vehicles and our batteries and they got nickel in them, but then they go back and do the audit and say, hey, hold on, you got that nickel from Georgecom Nickel. That's pretty dirty nickel at the end of the day. So you can't make the claim upstream that it's clean, that you're a clean energy company, and just by putting your stamp on it, ABC Automotive. So you're going to have to go get your nickel from a cleaner and more reliable source. Otherwise, you can't make that claim. So I think that's great for companies like you.
And that, and just the safety of the source, knowing that you're close to your supply chain, I think is going to make a big difference. You know, geopolitics are a little shaky out there right now, right? And how safe do you feel getting your nickel from Indonesia when you can get it from your backyard if you're a North American producer? No. So,
yeah.
So, that's, you know, 100%. Again, you know, we can speculate on all this stuff and, you know, will there be tariffs? And you know, somebody suggested there should be two types of pricing for nickel, clean nickel, dirty nickel. You know, is that going to happen? I don't know. All I know is that these large companies are coming in and they're investing now, you know, while the nickel price is down. I think that's a great sign. And I think we've got a project that could look very much like the three that I mentioned, in that we're near surface, we're near infrastructure. You know, we've got all those things going for us. And so we're...
So let's switch gears. So great about nickel, awesome. So the great track record, you're on your way to do more drilling, 431, so beautiful. Let's switch gears a little bit. You've got something that I don't know any other company that has in the ground right there with your nickel, which is talc. And yeah, we've kind of mentioned in the past, but now you're specifically talking about, in this bulk sampling program, you are going to test the metallurgy of the talc. In layman's terms, in English, what does that mean? And why is that important to you guys specifically in terms of a potential cash flowing product that you can just scoop out and send out? So give us a little bit of that layman's, like if you're sitting at the local bar, tell us about that.
It's interesting. We were aware have a talc deposit on here. We staked this ground, and we've got 200 square kilometers that is primarily, you know, gold related, right? That's what we're after, and it's right on the main gold trend. But there was this one stretch up the northwest part of our project, which was volcanic. Clearly, it was a different type of rock. We were aware of that when we staked it. And back in the 80s, there was one small area of zone one, not too small. You got to remember this thing 14 kilometers long, so small is a relative term. But one area of zone one where there was altered material and there was talc, and some guys studied it to death. They had hundreds of pages they wrote on it, and they were planning to produce a talc product primarily for forestry, for pulp and paper. And talc is the world's softest mineral, so it's number one on the hardness scale. It is the source of talcum powder, which got a bad rap from Johnson & Johnson, but the key is, try to find it without the nasty stuff attached to it. And talc is used in ceramics, plastics, pulp and paper, rubber. It's got a zillion industrial uses, industrial solvents, paints. It's about a $3 billion annual market. So the key for us, because of where we are, we've got five pulp mills within very short driving distance of where we are. We're, BC is still a forestry powerhouse. So we've got a potential market up there. I believe they're getting their product now from Montana. So when you consider that it's a bulk product that they use in their processing, the shipping cost would be a huge advantage for us if we're able to come up with a similar product. The talc, like everything else, starts right at surface in that area. And right at surface,
right
in
the
first 40 to 60 feet, it's about the rock is about 50% talc. As you go down deeper, it gets down to 80 to 90% talc. So it's very pure. They did a lot of studies on it in the 80s. They sort of took it to the lab and checked it all out. We'll have to repeat all that work, but it looked like usable talc. It would have a good market for it, and that might just work for the pulp and paper market. Now, what happened to that original program? I think the older gentleman who was sort of driving the train, kind of retired, and it kind of fell off the rails, and that was it. But we're excited about that as a potential product. And there's a talc
mine. And what you're testing right now, Perry, what you're testing, when you say testing the metallurgy for everyone out there to know, essentially what you're testing is, what quality is it, and can we separate it easily enough to make it economic? Do you have any sense for that, given all the reports in the past and what you guys kind of know? Do you have a reason to be optimistic that this could be a great source of cash flow, just scoop it out and sell it to the pulp and paper mills?
Very much so. We've gone through those old studies. The drilling that we've done on the area where the talc is basically is duplicating the results they got. What they reported seems to be dead accurate. Funny story, I think I've told you this once before, way back when, but when we drilled our second hole with a little backpack drill, this is when we first started drilling up there. We didn't know what we had. So we had this anomaly that indicated we probably had a bunch of nickel in the ground. It was a magnetic image. And I said, why are we getting this where we know there's a bunch of talc? Why are we, showing a nickel body there? So we went over, and the first couple of holes we drilled were only about 60 feet deep. And then we drilled where the talc was. And we didn't know for sure whether we were drilling off the same outcrop, the same portion of the outcrop. We drilled the first hole, went down 60 feet, drilled the second hole on an angle. At 42 feet, we actually pierced one of the drill holes from the 1980s. Okay. So a 1 1/4 inch drill hole, we got this perfect elliptical cutout. There's only one thing it could be, is that we pierced another drill hole. Now, what are the odds of that? So we know we're drilling exactly where they were, and our results were virtually identical to what they produced. What's interesting, though, is even there, the nickel count was about 15%. So there's a talc mine in Finland that produces talc and has taken the nickel out of the tailings, basically. So we could potentially have a two-product opportunity there.
How long until we find out? So when you start testing, how long will it take? So you're going to do this bulk sampling program. When do you think that'll take place? And then how long until the metallurgy comes up? Ballpark, I'm not pinning it to a date, but it'd be exciting to know when that might happen.
By the end of the year, we should know a fair amount. We're able to pull out with this permit. We're able to pull out, you're going to laugh, 3,999 tons of material through trenching. So one thing that we love about it, I love that. I guess there's a different permitting process.
$39.99.
Yeah, $39.99 sounds like a Walmart pricing. If you want to go 4,000, I believe it's a different permitting process that's more elaborate and would have taken us longer. So 3,999, that's a lot of material, right? And we'll pull part of that from where the talc is. And what's interesting about this is that because of the really uniform dissemination of the various materials through the ore body, we think that what we pull off the top, the metallurgical testing we do on that will be applicable, you know, all the way down, right? So we'll be able to do some trenching at the top, pull material and see what's going on. But we're really curious to see whether we replicate the results they got back in the 80s on the Telk. And you know, I mean, these guys went as far as, you know, they designed a plant and everything else back in the 80s. Now technology has changed. And I mean, even their old
reports. I was about to ask you, is it an elaborate CapEx at that point with the talc, or is it pretty straightforward? You can just, you know, scoop it out, do a little processing and send it off. How elaborate is the...
Put it this way, it looked pretty straightforward compared to what you have to do to get nickel and magnesium out of that stuff, right? By the way, I should point out that, you know, we're also about 21% magnesium consistently, again, from surface. And magnesium is a growing market as well. And if we can get good magnesium recoveries, we can do very well. One of our neighbors, a little company called Inamin, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it, but they're about 60 or 70 kilometers away from us. They just got really good results on their magnesium recoveries. And I believe we have similar looking geology. So if we can get good recoveries on the magnesium, that could be an interesting product. And magnesium gets used more and more in cast auto parts because it's lighter and stronger than aluminum. So it's about 25%.
Yeah, you've got a great 2024 is going to be, you know, the next 10 months or just 9 months are just going to be, this is really going to tell us what you've got there and multiple fronts. I love the fact that, yeah, the nickel is there for the long term. The talc is potentially there for the short immediate term to generate cash flow and things like that. Then you get the magnesium kicker and, you know, we've got three shots at doing some damage, you know, so I can't wait to see how that plays out. The last thing I want to touch on just a little bit is you are Green River Gold at the end of the day. That is the name of the company. And and we'll talk more in another interview, obviously, but you've got another potential way of generating cash flow for now from gold, which goes a long way in this market where it's still hard to find hard dollar funding, you know, just to make sure you cover the company's expenses. So tell us a little bit about that, and we'll have a more elaborate conversation another time. But I want people to know that that's not just, oh, we got some gold, we're going to try and Johnny come lately. You've got something real there. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, we've got a great project on the hard rock side. We've got 200 square kilometers that is mostly prone to gold. It takes a while to find hard rock gold. When we started the company, I wanted something that was going to generate short-term cash flow as well as, you know, the long-term investment and exploration potential. So we also staked a lot of placer claims, okay? And placer claims in BC, there's two sets of claims. Placer claims are the gravels that go down to bedrock. Mineral claims are everything from bedrock down. So our 200 square kilometers, that's bedrock claims, that's mineral claims. But we've also got somewhere in the neighborhood of, we got rid of a couple, 20 square kilometers of placer claims on some of the best known placer creeks and you know, properties with mining histories. And we permitted them. And the idea was we would rent them out to other miners and collect cash rent on them. We started doing that a couple of years ago. We got distracted with the hard rock stuff. The gold price kind of went to sleep for about 3 years. The gold price is heating up again. And we've got people coming to us now that are excited. We think we'll probably rent at least one claim out this year. We're actually toying with the idea of mining one ourselves, which we never thought we would do. And we are at this point, it's just a possibility, but at the very least, we'll generate cash flow from renting them to other miners again this year. And with gold over 2,900 Canadian, the math's looking pretty good. I should let you know, by the way, this was the business plan from the start, was to have short-term cash flow. I wanted to be able to walk into a room of
investors. Love that.
And when they say, how much cash have you got? And you tell them, and they say, what's your burn rate, right? They want to know how much you're spending every month. I wanted to be able to say zero, right? And they'd say, what? You know, and I'd say, well, we do enough placer mining that we cover all of our operational costs. And I still think that's feasible. I still think we can do that. And, you know, with gold price of 2,900, we're really well positioned for that as well. As you know, maybe your listeners don't, but we have a sidecar company called Gold Rush Supplies, which is a private company we run. We've got a 6,000 square foot shop in the town of Quesnel, which Green River shares. So our geologists, our operational people, they're all in that building. But that building is used to build equipment for placer miners. So we build trommels. We have a retail store in there that sells everything that placer miners could possibly need. So we basically have access to expertise and to all the equipment we need for doing placer mining. So very few people are as set up for success with placer mining as we are. So with the gold price,
and I love the fact it's two pronged. On the one hand, you could rent out some to guys like me and collect the rent, and you can also have the possibility of you doing yourself. And you're not going into uncharted territory because you guys have kind of been providing the proverbial picks and shovels to the placer miners. Anyway, so that's going to be something we look forward to talk about, Perry, but I want to kind of put that out there for everybody because I don't know of any other company that can generate some cash flow just from renting out, you know, some of their placer properties. And that's why it's unique as opposed to everybody else says, we have some gold over here. We think we're going to find Fort Knox and we'll let you know in 3 years. I mean, there are 100 stories like that, but your story is very unique. And I love the fact that you can do both, my friend.
It's we're getting back to our original sort of idea, you know, and that's thrilling. If you look back at the earliest stuff I wrote, that's what we were talking about, was short-term cash flow from placer and longer-term exploration potential from the hard rock, because I hate being a slave to the capital markets, right? It's nice to be able to know that you can survive even if you are having a difficult time raising money for exploration.
Yep. That cash flow is lifeblood.
Yeah. I think we can actually position ourselves to do that. So that's good. Yeah.
Well, make sure to keep us updated on any rental contracts and what you guys may decide to take a shot at a couple of your own. But you're right. And I'll leave it with this. I've always been a gold neutral guy for the last 10 years to the bane of the existence of some other clients and gold colleagues. I've said, guys, I just don't see it. It's going to be in a range here. It'll be in a healthy range. And I've now turned, given on the technicals, I'm starting to turn really bullish. But there's also Peter Brandt, who's a very well-respected technician, very well-respected, who has also been kind of gold neutral over the last several years, to the disdain of his followers, like, can't you see gold? But just recently, he switched gears, and he said he sees 2,500 to 2,750 gold in the near future. So perfect timing for you, Perry. You've got the nickel for the long term, 50 for 50 there. We're going to know more. You got the talc that could potentially provide great cash flow. You got the placers that can provide you a great cash flow there. Plus, you got the upside of mining it yourself as well. And we're not even talking about Fontaine Gold Project, which we'll say for another time, but you're really well positioned, not just in terms of I've got all these things, which is what a lot of, you know, I almost call them street vendors. I've got all these things. What would you like me to show you? You're advanced on all of what you have, all of it. You're not just, I've got this, and let's play whack-a-mole. You're advanced on all of it, and that's why I love your company, Perry, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the next few weeks, because you're going to start drilling. We're going to hear some more news, and then throughout the year, it's going to be a great year, my friend.
It will. I'm thrilled. It's going to be, I can't wait for the rest of the snow to go and just get out there and go to town. So it's going to be fun.
Thanks for joining us. Can't wait to have you back. To everyone at home, if you've been watching or listened by podcasts on Spotify, Google, Apple, your favorite podcast platform, it's been Perry Little, President CEO of Green River Gold, trades in Canada, CCR, trades in the US, CCRRF. For those new to the story, get to the Agoracom profile page so we get a good 30,000 foot, you know, overview of the company and what's there. And then once you've kind of got that under your belt, head over to the company's website, do your deep dive due diligence. Watch a couple of our previous interviews also very powerful and great information, and hopefully discovered your next amazing small cap resource company. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. See you next time.
Hey guys, this podcast is over. But don't forget to help your company by liking it or even leaving a comment. And then, don't forget to help yourself by following us on Spotify, Google, Apple, or on your favorite podcast platform, so you will never miss another one great Agora Gomez Small Cap podcast.